simple elude us, which is why uncovering the impact of encouragement was such a profound moment for me. It was there all along, and I had missed it so many times before. I kept thinking I had to give more, do more, be more, and all I needed to do was listen and encourage. Encouragement leads to confidence, which leads to action, which leads to accomplishment, which branches off to more encouragement, and so on, causing that ripple effect. So give it a try. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, take notice of those around you who may have quiet needs. You have the power to make a real difference with the actions you take. Listen to understand, and take the time to share words of encouragement. It's free and far-reaching. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone threw until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here. All I needed was a rock and I could lean on. Tower, KBOO 90.7. Dasha T said that.
Hello and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio. I am Jennifer Davis Page, your host. Today I have the pleasure of introducing to my listeners an award-winning designer, as seen in many magazine articles, including Modern Luxury in Scottsdale and the Red Book magazine, as well as Tucson Lifestyle magazine. I'd like all of you to meet Laura Tanzer. Laura, thank you so much for joining me and my listeners at Boom Goddess Radio.
It's my pleasure, Jennifer.
Now, you have a wonderful story to tell. You've changed a little bit about a lot about your business. So like you just start from the beginning and tell our listeners about Laura Tanzer.
Yes, well, I had a sort of boutique in downtown Tucson for a number of years. And then where I make one of a kind and limited edition, really special clothing and wearable art pieces. And the pandemic sort of shut that down, and my workers all found other things to do, and I sort of was wondering what to do next. And then I made masks, and then people started asking me to teach them skills, and I really did sort of a wholesale change, and I ended up teaching a lot. And so now that's what I do. Mainly I give workshops. And I moved, so I have a much nicer space in terms of light and air, and just it's lovely. It's quiet because I used to be right next to the train, which wasn't always quiet. It's just a really wonderful space in which to give workshops. And so now I'm teaching skills in sewing and pattern making and draping and how to make wearable art, and that encompasses everything from clothing to hats and fiber, everything, you know, adornment. I like to call it adornment or embellishment. Embellish the human body. So wearable art, all kinds of things. So whatever you can come up with. And I play, and I encourage people in my workshops to play. And everything we do is sustainably oriented, which has always been part of my biggest vision, is to be a sustainable maker, which means that I source vintage textiles, vintage trims, vintage buttons, vintage everything. I also source, in terms of textiles, what's called dead stock. And that means leftover bolts from manufacturers, textile manufacturers, as well as clothing manufacturers. And I source quality. So I source only natural fibers and organic where I can find organic in the quality that I'm looking for, because I will not put man-made fibers, which are mainly petroleum-based, on the human body, because we need to breathe. And the skin is our largest organ, and we don't want to confine that capability for health and wellness. So that's a big issue for me, is treating ourselves well in our clothing, not just looking great, feeling comfortable. So I make really cool clothing, but I also pay attention to the dynamics of human anatomy and how we move, how we sit, how we walk, how we wear that clothing so that it flows with us rather than constricting. So all of those things I take into consideration. And so from sourcing through making, I create as little waste as possible. And whatever leftovers I have are designated for either wearable art pieces, or I fill bins with little scraps and donate them to the local K-12 schools for art projects. And they love that because it's completely different from anything else that they have. So it's fun. I love doing this. I take on consignments in terms of design projects, everything from weddings to special events. I'm doing something for a Grammy nominee right now. And so it's pretty much all over the place.
I was going to ask you, do you still do special order? So since you've got a Grammy nominee, then I'm assuming you still do special order. Are you doing this because she is a Grammy nominee, or do you do special orders for anyone that might come to you and say, I need you?
Almost anyone who might come to me. I stay away from young brides because they get a little emotional, and I just don't want to deal with that. Mm-hmm. But secondhand brides, older brides, pretty much anybody. I do a lot of mother of the bride and mother of the groom. I do a lot of those, and they're fun because these are women who know themselves. I make things for men as well. I've made whole suits. I'm a tailor, so I've made suits for men. Again, it's special order. And there's a fair amount involved in tailoring as well.
So. Was it an easy transition from your atelier, where you had all one of a kinds, to your Learn Craft Sew workshops? Was that an easy transition for you? Did you have to think about it? Tell us how the thinking process of that went.
Yeah, I think it wasn't difficult. It just seemed like a natural transition for me because I wasn't open for business as a boutique. Mm-hmm. And I had people asking me to teach them one-on-one, and I just thought, why not? And then, and I had already done, before the pandemic, I had already done a couple of wearable art workshops. Mm-hmm. And those were really successful. I mean, extraordinarily successful. So I just thought, let me put this out there and see what happens. I mean, that's kind of how I operate anyway, you know, true artist. Let me just see, you know, let's experiment, see what happens.
Now, when you started your workshops, you're still at the atelier, I'm assuming, right? When you first, now, all right, so what gave you, I know you're full of ideas, but what gave you, did someone knock on the door and say, look, I would really like to learn how to do what you do? I mean, how did that whole conversation happen? and that whole thinking process happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I had been doing demonstrations at artisan fairs. So I would come with my dress form and a pile of fabric remnants, and I would just perform. It was, you could call it performance art if you want to. I'm not really into that, but you could call it that, because there I am just making stuff, and people would stop and ask me questions and interact with me. And I'm still working, but they're really fascinated with what I do. And then people started asking me if I would teach them. And that's how the first workshops happened. Yes. So yes. And again, it's always experimentation and then see what happens. And that's basically what was happening.
Okay. Now, okay. So we're in the first workshops now. Are we in the new location, or are we in the atelier at that point?
At that point, still in the atelier, because it was pre-pandemic. It was okay. It was the year before pandemic that all of that started taking place.
What was that first workshop? What did you teach in that first workshop?
I called it a wearable art workshop, and I taught people who are familiar with working with textiles and who not necessarily familiar with making garments per se, mm-hmm. but people who knew textiles and had made other things. And so I taught this workshop in how to use leftover fabrics, leftover trims, and make something that would be considered a one-of-a-kind wearable art piece, whether it was a hat or a cape or a garment that, you know, you could, you know, like a blouse or a jacket or a vest. So I taught people the techniques with which to use those remnants that they had, you know, piling up that they wanted to do something with and never really could figure it out.
What kind of talent does one have to possess to work with you? I mean, I can't thread a needle, all right? So now, I'm not your customer. I'm your customer when it comes to buying your beautiful items, but how do they know to come to you? I mean, have you been advertising, or did you guys just get together and brainstorm, and they tell you their background mm-hmm. and the kinds of things they would dream of doing? Help me with that.
I think it really comes out of the demonstrations that I was giving at these exhibitions. And somebody would say, you know, how do I learn to do what you do? And I would just say, well, I give workshops. And they would say, when's your next workshop? Can I sign up? Mm-hmm. And so I would just take a piece of paper and say, okay, it's going to happen over these 3 days, and this is how much it's going to cost, and a maximum of 7 people, and you can sign up. And then they would say, can I bring this around and get other people to sign up? And I'd be like, sure. And 10 minutes later, it's full.
All right. So now, how do you determine that they have what it takes?
Well, at that point in time, I wasn't really discriminating, because I knew that the people who were asking already had familiarity with working with textiles in some manner, but didn't really have any criteria. Going forward, I do have criteria, because people need to have some sort of basic familiarity with working with textiles and pins and scissors. Pretty much.
All right. Well, I found that to be fascinating, because I was just wondering, we only have a 30 seconds left in this segment, but I just want to say real quickly that I was wondering how a person that might have thought it was a good idea to have a Laura Tanzer workshop, and then they don't have any experience, they have no know-how, and we're going to talk about that when we come back from our break. Laura will be, to all of our listeners, we'll be right back with Laura Tanzer. Don't go away.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Back to Boom Goddess Radio. This is Jennifer Davis Page, and I have the privilege today of sitting with Laura Tanzer, an amazing designer, and she has a new studio called Learn Crafts. So welcome back, Laura. I was curious when we went to break as to how do you determine, once you get a group of 7, 8, 10 people to come to your workshop, how do you weed out the people? I don't mean to use the word weed out like that, but how do you weed out the people that have it and the ones that don't have it and they just thought it was a good idea at the time to be in the room with you? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so on my website, when people look at that particular workshop, because I have a few other workshops on my website, I specify that, you know, they should have a basic knowledge of textile, working with textiles, some kind of construction knowledge. Basic is fine. And other than that, I'm not really, I'm not looking for quote unquote talent. I'm looking for creativity. I'm looking for the willingness to experiment. And so, and you get everything. So I'll give an example from one of my early workshops before the pandemic. I had a bunch of women, no men in that workshop, and I welcome both men and women. And there was one woman in the workshop who was so boxed in by like prior learning, and she just could not get herself out of her own box, and she could not understand that this was experimental and that you could do pretty much anything you wanted to do. She kept trying to do something that was very restrictive and was just like things that she had learned to do with patterns that you buy at the store. And I kept telling her to loosen up, and she couldn't get there. And so she didn't really complete the workshop because it was not a good fit for her. So we get everything. And then at the other end of the spectrum, I had another student in the workshop who just she brought all these beautiful pieces of upholstery textiles, lightweight, you know, workable, not super stiff or anything. And she made the most gorgeous vest with these textiles, absolutely exquisite. And she had some trims, and she was just putting this all together. And other students in the workshop were going around to look at what she was doing, because it was just perfect, just beautiful. So you get everything from A to Z. And really, I can say, you know, you have to have A, B, C, D under your belt to get in there. But if you don't have that creative, mm-hmm. experimental mm-hmm. release, you're not going to be able to do it, because you just can't let go. And you have to be able to be like a five-year-old with a new crayon. I mean, that's what it's like. It's just this fun way to create things.
So. All right. So when I'm understanding all of that. So tell me, in a group of 10 or 12, how many stay? How many, after the first session, do they say, Laura, this is not for me, or I don't think I can do it, or do you think they can do it and you encourage them to stay? I mean, how do you then tell them, I think that you have what it takes, and working with me, I can bring it out? I mean, is that a conversation that you have?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I try to support and encourage as much as possible, even though I see that somebody just isn't going to get there. First of all, they're paying up front a substantial amount to take a 3-day workshop from me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're paying quite a few hundred dollars to be able to do this each. Okay. And so I don't want them to feel like I'm going to abandon them. So I'm going to try to encourage them as much as possible. But yeah, there are some people who just, they will self-select out.
I see.
That happens not just in this kind of workshop, but it happens in my sewing workshops. It happens in my pattern making workshops. It happens in my drawing, you know, to learn how to draw. It happens in those workshops. Even in my creative mending, which is the simplest workshop there is, people will self-select out. You know, they'll come in. I had one lady come in for, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 minutes of a, you know, 2.5-hour workshop. And she said, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I said, are you sure? And she said, yeah, I really wanted to be able to do this, but I can't do this. And she said, thank you so much for letting me be here. I really appreciate your time, but I'm going to go now. I'm like, okay.
That's excellent. Okay. All right. Now, learn craft sew. I want you to expound. I mean, we're in our second segment of the show. Learn craft sew. Tell us anything and everything you want us to know about it.
So it's mainly workshops, and they're in person. So
how long are the workshops? 3 days, you said?
Well, it depends on what it is. The wearable art ones, because they're so intensive, yes, those are three-day workshops. But most of my workshops are 2 to 3 hour workshops. And so they're not as expensive. Some of them, so for example, a pattern making workshop would be 4 different sessions. So you sign up for the 4 different sessions, and there'd be 4 Saturday afternoons in a row.
How many hours in those afternoon sessions?
2 to 3, depending on, you know, what we do that day. But I build in 2 to 3. I've figured out that, just from many years of teaching in general, that's the attention span that people have for something like that. It's 2 to 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon, and they get to learn, you know, that. So I have 2 pattern making courses. I have a beginning course and I have an intermediate course. And you have to take the beginning course before you get to the intermediate course. You can't come into the intermediate course saying, oh, well, I've taken pattern making somewhere else. I'm like, nope, not going to work. So yeah. So with my courses, because I learned from professionals back in the Garment Center in New York. And so I got to do it right. That's the way I learned it. I don't cut corners. And so that's the way I teach it. right from the start.
All right, so at the beginning with the pattern making, they had their fabrics. You approved the fabrics? Is that how?
No, pattern making is not about fabric. Okay. Pattern making is about making a pattern. So making a pattern for a blouse or making a pattern for a pair of pants. And I teach them, it's all about measurements, really. Measurements and fractions and drawing so that you can make a pattern that you can use to cut out your fabric to make your garment. I teach sewing classes. And again, I teach a beginning sewing class and an intermediate sewing class. And again, you have to take the beginning before you get to the intermediate. In the sewing workshops, I teach everything from how to thread, you know, your machine and your bobbin. I teach hand sewing. I teach the basics. I teach what tools you're going to need and why. And it's not teaching just the how. I always include the why, because people don't know, you know, why do we have to have a dart? Why do we have to have this kind of zipper as opposed to that kind of zipper? I explain all of that. I love to bring that in because a lot of sewing classes or pattern making classes don't teach that. And people want to know. And once you know why something is the way it is, you're going to pay more attention to it than if you just know, oh, well, this is what they said. This is how we have to do it, right?
So. Do they walk out with an outfit? Do they walk out with a completed whatever it is they were there to come to do? So they make you teach them how to make a pattern for a blazer, let's just say. Do they walk out with a completed, after the course is over, do they walk out with their blazer? Wear yes. their blazer out?
Yes.
Oh, that's remarkable. See, I'm really very impressed by this. I can't be one of your students because I'm that girl that can cook. I mean, that's my art, but I can't. I've never even in home ec in high school, like, you know, they said, no, Jennifer, this is not. So, all right, we've got a couple of minutes left in the segment. Tell your potential students and customers where they can find you, your website, your address, anything that you want them to know so that they can call you and sign up and get more information about your classes.
Yes, so I have a phone in my studio that's designated just for the studio, and that is 520-981-9891. So they can call. If I'm not here, just leave a message saying, you know, I'm interested in, you know, this workshop, that workshop, and I'll get back to them. You can also go to my website, which is www.learncraftsew.com. And there's all kinds of information on the website. And if you can't find what you're looking for, there is a contact form that you can fill out and send an email, and it will go to learncraftsew@gmail.com. And so those are the best ways to get in touch with me. And you know, if you see something that you want to sign up for, just sign up for it. Eventually, I will also have some recorded tutorials on basics. Like I've already recorded a bunch of tutorials on how to sew buttons, different types of buttons. I'm still trying to figure out how to get them up there, and I'm figuring out the software part of it.
Okay.
So I've got that, and I've got some tutorials on mending, and I've got some tutorials on hemming, hand sewing, as well as machine sewing. So I'm developing a series of tutorials in different areas, and I'm going to put them up there, and they're going to be relatively inexpensive. They'll probably be like, you know, $20 for a set of hemming tutorials, and you'll get three or four tutorials in there, that kind of thing. So, but I'm still working on the software part.
Well, I cannot tell you how I appreciate you visiting us at Boom Goddess Radio. You're an amazing designer. Your pieces are just extraordinary, and I appreciate you being with us today. I want to thank all of our listeners at Boom Goddess Radio for your continued support. I'd like you to continue going to our website, boomgoddessradio.com. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, Boom Goddess Radio. And remember, we will see you on the radio next week. And this is Jennifer signing off.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
O Portland por el 90.7 FM y transmitiendo en línea a través de KB.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 4 de octubre del 2022. El presidente ucraniano Zelensky descartó formalmente las conversaciones de paz directas con el presidente ruso Vladimir Putin luego de que el Kremlin declarara que había anexado 4 territorios ucranianos incautados por el ejército ruso. Hoy temprano, Zelensky firmó un decreto que establece que las conversaciones con Putin sobre el destino de Ucrania serían imposibles y agregó: "Estamos listos para un diálogo con Rusia, pero con otro presidente de Rusia".